Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Back on FST, hour number three. Yeah, we're going to pause on football for a second. Because we got to talk about some other stuff. We'll come back to Miami Dolphins. We'll do it in the next segment. Did some quick math during the break, Kev. Isaiah Crowell was 15th in the league in touches last year. He had 206 carries, 28 receptions. So, pretty good number. But that's what I start talking about. Like, you have all those guys in front of him. You think, like, Deion Lewis is going to out-touch him by that much when Derrick Henry's there. And Deion Lewis is 25th of running backs, 8 in front of him. You think Rex Burkhead is going to out-touch him or Marlon Mack? You got Sony Michel, Royce Freeman, Ronald Jones, Marshawn Lynch in there. Those guys could, but you sure about Sony Michel? I'm not. Granted, you're taking all this into account. What team is he on? But, you know, how good was the team he was on last year? They didn't win a game. So Isaiah Crowell could be one of these guys I start to take a look at now.
And he's probably going to a worse offensive line, to your point.
If you're a zero RB guy, he is probably going to a worse offensive line. But if you're a zero RB guy, he could be your guy. 33rd running back taken. I'm going to take another look at average draft position. Let's see where he's at right now, just so I get a sense of where he's going. Oh, come on. Help me out here, computer.
I mean, as you quickly grab that, I'll just say, I mean, you know, we've mentioned now already with two teams that might have really, really good options if you end up going zero RB strategy with Sony Michel and Isaiah Crowell. They're closely paired. So if you're, you know, maybe if it's something on the turn or something like that and you end up with those two guys, that might really be feasible, especially if you end up with a really strong receiving core. That might be a good bet. Might be a good strategy to deploy.
Crowell, there we go. And according to Fan, so there's a bunch of different ratings here, but I'm looking at FanTrax has him as the 98th pick off the board. So,
8th round.
Yeah,
8-2. Right.
Crazy. For a guy that could see 200, let's just say duplicates last year, 234 touches. That's really good value. That's a, you know, that's your zero RB guy, right?
Yeah.
And I'm looking at other guys that are picked in front of him here. Yeah, Rex Burkhead, like the Rex Burkhead thing. You got the Green Bay Packers running backs, one drafted in front of him on average in Jamal Williams, one drafted right behind him in Aaron Jones, who's now suspended 2 games. His old running mate, Duke Johnson, being drafted in front of him right now. So
that's wild.
Yeah, like Isaiah Crowell, I think part of it, too, is that expectations went up pretty high for Isaiah Crowell these last couple of seasons on a team that went 1-31. So you start looking and be like, he's not that efficient, and I don't know about, I'm not going to get burned by him again. So maybe that's one of your zero RB guys.
You know,
you're waiting for him to fall, and you're picking up guys.
I don't
subscribe, by the way. I don't dedicate myself to the zero RB strategy because I think every draft can be a little different. And I tried in one of my leagues. I tried it last year, and it failed. It was a disaster. I had Frank Gore and Marlon Mack, and a couple other guys that didn't pan out. So I spent the whole year just trying to chase the Todd Gurley owner. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I tried it. I do a lot of different leagues. I'll definitely do a zero RB strategy in one league. When I'm doing mock drafts, I'm checking those out. I'm trying zero wide receiver in some mock drafts to see what it would look like. What if I load up an RB and wait on some of these value wide receivers, right, and pick up Robbie Anderson? And I know it's guys we're talking about today, and Robbie Anderson and Kelvin Benjamin and other guys, and maybe somebody breaks out, you know, that kind of thing. But we'll see. I usually play around. There's usually one league I'm in a year where the team just is awful because I've tried something different. I usually save it. This is a stupid way to do it probably, but I do it for fun. I usually save it for my last draft of the year where I go, I call it my hedge draft, where I pick a bunch of guys that I've been saying all summer I wouldn't really be that into. Last year it was Joe Mixon. I was crushing people that were overdrafting Joe Mixon last year. My last draft of the year, I was like, all right, I'll take one share of Joe Mixon. Didn't work out. That was the team. Joe Mixon, Marlon Mack, Frank Gore. Like, those were the running backs. And maybe I threw Tevin Coleman in there or something. But it ended up being a problem for that team. And, you know, I missed the playoffs, but whatever. This is one team in one year. You can't freak out about it. So, there you go.
I just wanted to say something to your point, and I can't remember for the life of me who said this. I remember when I was originally interned with the Roto Experts. I don't remember if it was Adam Ronis. It could have been Sussman. But they said people, fantasy players, always act like a scorned ex-lover when it comes to players, and it'll cost them value. And I remember last year the Isaiah Crowell train was chugging along, and a lot of people are on it, and a lot of people got burned. So that probably is the reason why that ADP looks the way it is, because people really don't like getting burned by the same player, especially 2 years in a row.
Yeah, it's the same thing. Like, you have to be that's why I suggest always going back and looking at last year's ADPs as you're doing your drafts, because you should just go through it, and as you're doing your mock drafts, compare it to the previous year and see which guys are just getting short shrift or they're slipping a little bit because, you know, I can't think of, I'm trying to think of somebody off the top of my head, but maybe Isaiah Crowell is one of those guys. He just wasn't that efficient in Cleveland and people are done with him. But meanwhile, the Jets signed him as a free agent. He's the starting running back. He might touch the ball 250 times, which would be good for, based on last year's numbers, good for a top 12 in number of touches. I think you take the opportunities over the efficiency every time if the opportunities are going to be that great. But that being said, so there you go. That's it on the Jets. Other things I wanted to talk about. One is the World Cup, because that was a good time yesterday. Croatia taking down Russia in penalty kicks. I think, I guess we were on air when England had already won.
Yeah.
They had beaten Sweden. So it's down to the final four. England plays Croatia next Wednesday, and then Belgium is going to play France on Tuesday. And a week from now, we'll have a – is the World Cup final next Saturday or Sunday? It's next Sunday, right?
I think it's Sunday.
Yeah, so we will be probably on air when that's going down. I'm not working next Saturday, but I will be working next Sunday. So – I guess that'll be a little bit later in the day because it's usually a nighttime.
Or like 2 o'clock.
Yeah, something like that. But that'll be good stuff. But it was exciting yesterday. The England match, I thought they did a pretty good job beginning to end of controlling it. I watched the replay last night to get a sense of it. I thought they thoroughly outplayed Sweden. It doesn't matter that they've had an easy road there. All they got to do is win one more game and they're in the final. And I think they can beat Croatia. I think Croatia is a very tough team, and they were probably underrated coming into this tournament. It was a pretty wild game in that it's the first time since 1994 that a tying goal happened in extra time. You know, Croatia scored in the 101st minute, and then Russia came back in the second extra time and scored in the 115th minute. That was the first time that had happened in 24 years in World Cup action. Usually the players are so gassed that one goal gets scored in extra time and then it's done. Or everybody's gassed and nobody's really coming up with any legitimate scoring opportunities and lets it get to PKs.
Yeah, I think one of the things for Croatia is the health of their keeper, because Subasic was, I mean, he was struggling out there to end that game, which made what he did in penalties even more impressive. And on the other side of that matchup, the England keeper, Pickford, I can't remember the exact spelling of it at the moment, but it was so phenomenal in his game. So if there is a disparity there, just even in health and form, Subasic has been great. So it's not form. It would be a matter of health. But again, as England's keeper has looked, that may end up being the difference in that game.
Yeah, he clutched his hamstring on a play later in regulation time, and then they didn't know if he was going to have to come off the field. He kind of sucked it up. He looked like he was struggling. But, yeah, again, as you said, he made a couple of big saves in the extra frame. Luka Modric, really the best player on Croatia's team, plays for Real. I think Real. Yeah. His kick was saved, but the goalie didn't put as strong a hand on it. It deflects off of the post into the opposite side of the net. So a little bit of luck. Better be lucky than good in those scenarios. But I had a lot of fun watching that one yesterday. I think the Russian fans were obviously upset, but that so far exceeded expectations. It would have been wild if they made it to the final, to the semis, but it would have been wild if they made it there. But nonetheless, I think a good effort overall for a team that came into the World Cup FIFA ranked 70th overall. That's a pretty good result to get to the final eight and be within a couple of penalty kicks of making the semis. So that was a lot of fun. And then the other story that I wanted to talk about was my man, Kevin Knox.
22
points in his summer league debut. And I got down to the point where I was like, I wanted Knox or Bridges. And by the draft, between our discussions and all the other stuff I read, I thought he was the guy I wanted. And now I actually watched some of that game last night. It was on, I think it was on a little bit later. So I was just able to watch it, and I watched the first half, and he was great. He dominated that game. They played against the Hawks and Trae Young. Trae Young had 21 points as well. But Knox had 22 points, 7 rebounds, and immediately people were extremely positive about it, including Bill Simmons, who's obviously an NBA expert and would love to just keep trashing the Knicks. But he said, had a positive tweet of saying congrats, because he is the quintessential modern NBA player.
And there was even an update that I got that one NBA executive told a reporter from The Athletic. The quote is, Knox is effing really good. I mean, the reaction from that game one, everyone loved what they saw. And I tell you, I watched a lot of Kevin Knox in college. And the athleticism, I just don't remember it being that impressive. The dunks, he was soaring, Mike. He was soaring out there.
It was a highlight reel.
It really was. And I tell you, I got higher and higher on Knox as we got closer to this process, to the point where I really was like, man, like, we're talking this modern game. He's only 18. Like, maybe this guy should be a top five pick. And now it's one game, and you never want to overreact to summer league. But that feels like that's probably what should have happened. And look, I understand maybe why it didn't, but yeah, it's happy times in New York. And honestly, Mitchell Robinson looked awesome. He looked awesome. His rim protection,
I know,
was wonderful. He looks like he has about a 9'7" wingspan. You can't convince me otherwise.
Yeah. But look, finally positive news for the Knicks. I know that we're not going to see Porzingis back maybe at all next season as they get sort of tankalicious with this team and just let Knox
That's
out there.
That's the best thing I've ever heard.
But they should. They should not bring him back.
I'm telling you right now, but if they brought that to Adam Silver and they said, if we just coin it as tankalicious, he's all in on tank.
Yeah.
Can I get your expectations maybe a little too high for the Knicks? Not for this coming season?
Sure.
But sure. I'm sure that you saw the report that Jimmy Butler has no intentions on staying in Minnesota, and obviously, we've talked
good
on
trade,
this.
Guys. Solid trade, Minnesota. Oh, brought him up there. Now you're going to blow up the entire franchise. They actually didn't give up that much.
But the the fact that, you know, and then we have the report that he wants to team up with Kyrie, and there's talks that Kyrie really might leave Boston. I'm telling you, Mike, the number one team that I would anticipate that those two go together is the Knicks. Kyrie, when he requested...
I love Jimmy Butler.
When Kyrie,
I'm not really happy about him blowing up two franchises in less than a year, but I like Jimmy Butler a lot.
Kyrie, I'm not going to lie to you. That's a fair Kyrie's point of contention.
Kyrie is currently on one franchise blown up, and he's working on his second. So I don't know that's an ideal marriage, but if those guys are buddies and they want to play with KP and Kevin Knox and Lonzo Trier, then let's do it.
And if they end up being a little tankalicious and they can get themselves a nice pick to pair with that, and whether it ends up being a trade piece or something, if they can really get Kyrie and Jimmy Butler, I mean, look, that's no exaggeration. A healthy Kristaps Porzingis, Kyrie Irving, Jimmy Butler. And
they win the East.
Say again?
They win the East.
Absolutely.
They win the East.
Absolutely. So, and you know, I'm sure any Knicks fans who might be listening to this is like, oh, here we go again. My expectations are going
to
get
too
high.
No, I'm not doing it. I'm not allowing you to do that to me.
Oh, don't worry.
I understand the possibility.
Here's the thing.
I'm squarely at 1% chance.
You know that right now I am already gearing up to the 2019 offseason. So you're going to hear about this a ton from me. So I'm going to eventually talk you into it, and I won't be satisfied until we lead this show with you saying, the Knicks are getting Jimmy Butler and Kyrie.
Knicks are Eastern Conference champs in 2020. You heard it here first.
Yeah!
I'm in.
Woo!
So we'll come back. We'll come back. We're talking Miami Dolphins. Before we close out the show, it's Mike and Kevin on FST. Join us to talk Miami Dolphins right after this.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Little PE on your Sunday morning. Your home, Fantasy Sports Today, your home of the 2020 Eastern Conference Champion Knicks campaign. As I got super excited about Kevin Knox last night. If you join playing daily fantasy sports but are sick of dealing with professionals using algorithms to select hundreds of lineups and entries, try the Props Builder tool at mybookie.ag. Forget having to create multiple lineups, ditch the hassle of dealing with late scratches, and avoid experts winning 90% of the money. Invest in the players that you want without salary caps. And if you sign up for a new account using the promo code FNTSY, you can elect an option to receive a 50% deposit bonus with a rollover requirement. No more dealing with late lineup scratches. No experts to compete against. Just you and the prop that you choose. Go to mybookie.ag, enter promo code FNTSY upon sign up, and choose your matchups using the Props Builder tool. That's mybookie.ag, promo code FNTSY. So, where are we at? Miami Dolphins.
Dolphins from Miami.
Let's go to their schedule first. Yeah, the Dolphins of Miami. We did talk about them earlier. Did we miss anything on the Pats? I felt like we gave maybe the Pats not enough love. But
we didn't get to Gronk a lot or their defense, really.
Okay, so let's do the Gronk. We'll dice this up a little bit of the Pats before we get into Miami, because I felt like we did not get into the Pats as much as we should. So currently, ADPs looking at tight ends. I don't think it's going to be any surprise that he's at the top of the list. Travis Kelce, Zach Ertz right behind him. As I mentioned earlier, the crazy Gronk stat, let me pull it up again, is 84.7% of Gronkowski's targets in 2017 were converted into either a first down or a touchdown in 2017. his targets, not his receptions. So it's an even greater accomplishment. The league average amongst tight ends was just 54%, so he bested that by over 30%. And the second highest rate was O.J. Howard at 76.9%, but I'm sure his touch rate or target rate was much lower than Gronkowski's. I'm going to go to it right now. So what are your thoughts on Gronk? Last season, conceivably, in New England, he's talked about retirement, but he's all in. I think they use him up as much as they ever have, especially with Edelman out for the first four games of the year.
Is this enough to get you to actually draft him? Because I know you are also a wait on tight end guy. But Gronkowski, no.
It is not.
Here's the reason why I think I as well would share that sentiment. Might be for different reasons. I think you're just going to wait. If you guaranteed me 16 games, probably. But you can't. And for that reason, I can't do it. But if he plays 16, he honestly could be in for a career year. That it really could be that type of season for Gronk, because he is so much better than everybody else in as far as the wide receiver core goes, especially with Edelman out those four games. He could be in for a career year, but again, it's the health. I cannot spend a pick on a tight end without some type of guarantee from him, not with that injury history.
Yeah, targets last year for tight ends. Kelce was first overall with 123. Evan Engram at 115. Delanie Walker, 111. Zach Ertz, 110. Jack Doyle, 107. Gronk right behind him at 106. So he was top six. He didn't play in two games. So touches per game is probably, you know, that's into the top five, maybe top three. Other guys played a full season. Gronk missed one game and then sat out in week 17 because there was nothing on the line. He still finished second amongst all tight ends in fantasy points behind only Travis Kelce. Again, that's including week 17. So in a points per game situation, Gronk is first in the league. Right now, however, his ADP, as I look at it, is first overall. But I want to see overall where Gronk is going on average. And I am looking right now, and it is 23rd. So that is end of the second round in 12-team leagues, which I actually think is reasonable. I typically do not get in on tight ends because I don't like the way my team is structured when I go for a tight end early. And it is putting a lot of weight on the position, especially for a guy with Gronk's injury history. Now, he did play most of the season last year, 14 out of 15 possible games for him. They weren't going to play him in week 17 just for, you know, obvious reasons. They didn't need to play for anything, so you're not going to put him at risk of injuring himself in week 17. Now, do they feel like they need to manage Gronk in a season like this because they're trying to get to the Super Bowl with a, I don't want to see that it, their chances are fleeting, but clearly there should be health concerns for somebody like him who has even talked about retirement and feels banged up at the end of every season. So do they need to manage that at all? It doesn't seem like they really did it last year. So why do it this year?
I mean, the thing with the Pats is they can be careful always, because I assume that your answer to this, is there anything short of a Tom Brady injury that would stop you from picking this team to win the division? Oh,
probably not even the conference. Honestly, probably not even the conference.
Oh man. Yeah, I mean that's what it is though. So, and in terms of defensively, they now have both McCourty brothers back there. The linebacker position is still a little bit of a concern. Last year they were on that historically bad run defensively. They started to kind of piece it together. Maybe with Matt Patricia gone, it could be dicey.
They still only let up the five. They allowed the five least points in the league. Yeah, it was brutal early. They gave up tons of yards, and obviously they got smoked in the Super Bowl. So there are a lot of issues there. But at the same time, they don't give up a lot of points, and they were first in the league in average field position because their special teams are so good. So they were allowing up a lot of yards, which is very often been the case for them during this successful run. They're happy. They're fine to give up yardage. They're just not going to give up a lot of points, or they're going to force teams into field goals because they're really good in the red zone. They've shown that historically. It's just really what they're the best at. If there's one attribute other than their quarterback and their tight end that you can focus on, it's their ability to limit teams specifically in the red zone. They don't give up as many touchdowns as other teams because they're very good when it comes to scoring time.
Yeah, I mean, that's just what it is. And it's also just the average field position. The pieces of the game that are typically overlooked, Belichick is the best at. And that's just really what it comes down to. So, you know, there's not much you can say. They're minus 1,500 to make the playoffs. Almost three times as likely as the next closest team.
Yeah, so back to Gronk real quick. You know, we don't need to spend a lot of time on the best tight end in the league, but it's just personally my strategy. I'm not in on drafting Gronk, although I do think that at 23, that's a little bit more reasonable than it has been in years past. He was second last year in yards amongst tight ends. First. He's only Kelsey was the only other one over 1,000 yards. They both scored 8 touchdowns, which led the league. So, Jimmy Graham had 10 touchdowns, so which they were right behind Jimmy Graham. All over the place right now with Gronk. But in any event, there you go. As far as their defense is concerned, the Matt Patricia leaving is obviously big news, but some people thought maybe it was time for him to go, right? Because they were giving up so many yards, because they played horribly in the Super Bowl. Still almost won, but they played horribly in the Super Bowl. Maybe it is time for a change there. So I'm taking a look quickly at their depth chart, and you can get a sense that they didn't make tons of changes, right? They still have a lot of the same group. Stephon Gilmore was the big offseason pickup last season. Devin McCourty remains there. Patrick Chun remains there. They brought in Jason McCourty, Devin McCourty's brother. But everybody else the same. Dante Hightower, who was obviously injured last year, Kyle Van Noy, Trey Flowers, Malcolm Brown, Danny Shelton, Adrian Claiborne, all of these guys all of these guys brought in really over the course of the last year plus.
Do you know who their defensive coordinator is by chance?
Who is their defense?
No, so it's a trick question. We'll not have you.
Bill Belichick?
They didn't name one. So that's going to be an interesting storyline probably to follow. If they're fine, then it'll be like, yeah, duh, of course they're fine. But if the defense does start to get a little bit shaky, then that is going to lead to some more questions, because as they're going to move forward without a defensive coordinator. That's
I think they're okay. Yeah, I think their guy. I think the guy in charge is going to be all right. I think he's going to be fine running the defense.
Sure, I don't disagree. I'm just... This is another
thing.
We'll
never know. We'll never know to what extent that Patricia had complete control of the defense. Anyway, yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Shall we give the Dolphins their due?
Yeah, sure. Let's go to the Dolphins. So, Miami Dolphins. Ryan Tannehill, I think I mentioned earlier, was the 28th ranked quarterback, right?
Mm-hmm.
For ADP. I think that's about right. I don't think he's draftable in a 2QB league until you see him. Aww. I think he's the type of guy for a 2QB league that you have a bunch of fab money or your waiver wire set up. I think you have it chambered, ready to pick up Tannehill if and when your number two guy isn't great. Like Baker Mayfield is at 26 on this list and Trubisky 27. Dalton, 28. Excuse me, it's lower than that. Bortles, 29. Lamar Jackson, 30. Ryan Tannehill, 31. So I think he's that type of guy. Like, say you picked up... Case Keenum, who's 22nd on this list by Fantasy Pros standards. Say you picked him up, and things aren't looking good early. But Tannehill's looking a little better earlier. I think you have him ready to go. I'm not saying that he's a guy that you target. I'm just saying he could be a guy that is a waiver wire guy. He's an occasional DFS play. He's an occasional spot starter if you got somebody that's hurt or you got a bunch of bye weeks, but I don't think you're looking at him beyond that. He starts the season against against Tennessee, then at the Jets, Oakland, at New England, at Cincinnati, Chicago, Detroit, at Houston, New York, at Green Bay, then the bye week. So there's your first 10. Not murderer's row, not easy, not murderer's row. Coming out of the bye week at Indy, Buffalo, New England, at Minnesota, Jacksonville. You do not want him in the final month of the season. That I can assure you of, playing the Pats, Vikings, Jaguars as you finish out your playoffs. But enough about Ryan Tannehill. He's not really a draftable guy at this point. So let's go to the running back position. And give me your thoughts on their running back depth chart.
I mean, I don't know. I thought Kenyon Drake was pretty good, and that's why it was a little surprising to see Frank Gore come in. You know, maybe it's just competition, but, I mean, Frank Gore's been chugging along for a lot of years now. And I think that he's definitely a guy that, you know, if Adam Gase is all about culture, reset, not to say anything against Kenyon Drake, but a veteran like Frank Gore would be attractive to him.
Yeah, I'm going to look up their ADPs right now as well. Frank Gore is a total freak. The guy had two ACL injuries in college, and he's in year 15 of his NFL career. I can't believe he's still going, and yet he was still productive last year as well. That's the amazing thing about it. He was able to – look, he wasn't particularly efficient, but at the same time, he remained the starting running back in – Indianapolis the entire year, and now he's find himself possibly in another position of a starting job. My problem with Kenyon Drake, and yeah, he was good at times last year, but my problem with him is I never thought he was the type of guy that would be able to stand up to an entire NFL season, you know, just getting pounded week in, week out. He had 133 carries last year and 32 catches. That's Drake did. And he ended up with 644 yards, 239 receiving, 4 touchdowns. Pretty nice return because he was a waiver wire pickup. I can tell you from experience because I picked at the end of Scott Fishbowl draft last year, which is 22 roster slots, picks 21 and 22 for me were Kenyon Drake and Damian Williams because I wasn't entirely confident that Jay Ajayi would last the season. I didn't know he would be traded, but I wasn't sure they would last the season in Miami. Guy's got a little bit of a chronic knee issue, and he isn't the type of guy that can necessarily stand up to it week in, week out, despite his successes last year. But so my big mistake is that when I needed somebody during a bye week or something like that, I cut Drake in favor of Williams, and I was wrong. I was dead wrong. They went with Drake. You have to remember back when that happened, there was no sense at all as to who the clear backup was. Mm-hmm. I think the two players combined had a total of about 20 fantasy points when Jay Ajayi was traded. So I took a little bit of a guess. I thought Williams would be the guy because he could stand up to some more touches, and it didn't happen. But you're right. It is a little, I guess, it probably wasn't the first place you would think of Frank Gore going, but he still ended up there. And Frank Gore last year, I'm trying to find the math here, he had 261 carries last year and 29 receptions. So says a lot about the workload that he can still handle and what it'll look like. So go ahead.
Here's the thing with Kenyon Drake, though. There were only 5 games that he saw double-digit carries. He had just a shade under 5 yards a carry in those games for about almost 90 yards per game. It went for 23 carries for 120 yards, 25 carries for 114, 16 for 78, 13 for 57, and 14 for 75. The games, and it was the last 5 games of the year. But in those 5 games, he was really good. So I understand your concerns, but what we've seen of him and when he had the opportunity, he really did make the most of it. So I think that's one of the difficult things.
He was good.
If Frank Gore's not there, this isn't cloudy. And a lot of people are pumping up to Kenyon Drake. And maybe people aren't that concerned about Frank Gore, but I think they should be. Just because
Yeah.
He is the guy. Frank Gore's been doing this forever. Just feels like he's going to do this forever.
Right now, Kenyon Drake is the 19th running back off the board, according to ADP, and Frank Gore is 63rd. So the experts don't seem to have a concern about this at all. I'm worried, personally, that Kenyon Drake's ADP is way too high. So we'll come back, talk a little bit more about this and about the Miami receiving core right after this. It's Mike and Kevin on FST.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
FST, Mike and Kevin closing out the show. Coming up after this, it's Fantasy Football Frenzy. It's going to be Kevin Walsh. He's going to be sitting in for Corey Parson, who's on the road today, along with George Kurtz for the next 2 hours. So you got a lot of AFC East fodder for George in the next 2 hours. And then after you, Kevin, is the Tout Wars Baseball Hour. That's 2 to 4, Laura Michaels, Justin Mason, and Todd Zola on that program. So the Dolphins currently sitting, man, Vegas really doesn't like the Dolphins. 5.5 wins. They had the Jets at 6.5, the Pats at 10.5. I would buy the Pats right now. And Buffalo, let's go back to Buffalo, 6.5. So
where are those odds from? That, just curious.
That is Vegas, betonline.ag. That's where they stem from. I believe that is correct. Yeah. Yep. That's what I have. You'll probably see some changes from site to site right now, but it'll get, you know, it'll get a little tighter as we get closer to the season. But that's where we're at right now. 5.5 on the Dolphins, 6.5 on the Jets, 6.5 on the Bills, Pats at 10.5. Based on the schedule, so you got to try and buy these things early. You know what I mean? When it comes to a team like the Pats, like, yeah, you could sit there and say, well, what if Brady gets hurt or Gronk gets hurt and they already lost Edelman? Like, you can take yourself through those machinations, but when's the last time the Patriots didn't win 11 games? They do it all the time. They do it every year. They won 13 last year, and people were like, this defense sucks. They won 13 games, and they came really close to winning the Super Bowl. But, and I had reservations in my over-under situation last year. I had reservations about the Pats because the number was big. It was 12.5 last year.
2002.
And if 2002 is the last time they didn't win 11.
Yeah, they were 9-7.
Yeah, it's the last time they missed the playoffs. So last year the number was 12.5. They had to get to 13. And if that call doesn't go their way against the Steelers, they lose. That was actually a crazy turning point in our contest with my friends because I had the Steelers over 10.5 and he had the Pats over, no, I had the Steelers might have been 11.5. So I had to sweat it out. The Steelers still won 13 games, so I was good to go. But at that moment, the Steelers would have gone over, the Pats would have gone under. It was kind of a huge call in favor of my buddy. In any event, back to the Dolphins. A little note here. ESPN ranked like the backfields, the 32 backfields, 1 to 32. They actually have Miami at 28. So Drake has registered only 166 carries since being drafted in the third round of 2016, but his career 5.8 yards per carry supplies plenty of reason for optimism. He enjoyed that mini breakout, which he talked about. He had 444 rushing yards after being promoted to a full-time role in week 3. Expected to get first shot at lead back duties, but 35-year-old Gore is averaging 3.8 yards per carry over the past 3 seasons. He'll also be involved. Kalen Ballage is there as a rookie. Also, they've had offensive line issues. They signed Josh Sitton from the Bears at left guard. He obviously gets pretty high grades from Pro Football Focus. He's been good. Laramie Tunsil, their former first-round pick, not so good out of the gate with the Dolphins, but he's going to be slotted in at left tackle. They got other issues at center and right guard. Right tackle Juwan James should be there and should be legit. So the offensive line is okay. It's not great. It's barely good. But nonetheless, that's going to be an interesting one. I think Drake is going to get overdrafted by people, and I'll probably be out on him. Not because I don't think he's going to be good. I just think he's going to be overdrafted. That's the sense I've gotten for the last couple of months. You'll need him to take the job and run with it and not have Gore really be a part of it at all to get return like that. If he's the 19th running back off the board, you're going to need him to get a lot of touches, you know, more than he saw last year, clearly. But that was without any other options at the end of the year last year. I think that's why he got that. I just don't think he's the guy that can stand up to the 300 touches that you might want. Or 250 or 275 that you might want in drafting them that high. So, anyway, let's move on to their wide receiving core. DeVante Parker is really the story, right? He's the guy that everybody wants to finally break out and be the man. You got Kenny Stills there still, and Danny Amendola was the signing during the offseason. So, I kind of like the receiving core, but it all is really going to begin and end with DeVante Parker. Can he be the dominant guy that they drafted in the first round 3 years ago, and can Tannehill get him the ball? It's really going to be about that. I'll check up on the other ADPs for the other two, but give me your thoughts on DeVante Parker.
I mean, we've been doing this for, it feels like forever. And I remember last year we convinced ourselves, I say most, a lot of people in the fantasy community, not either of us directly, but that Jay Cutler was the best thing that ever happened to DeVante Parker. Because Jay's going to sling it all over the field, and DeVante's going to go and make the big plays. And I mean, the stuff just didn't necessarily come through. And one of the things that stood out yesterday from the article we talked about with Jake was his bold prediction for the Dolphins was that Kenny Stills was going to end up their number one wide receiver, which is certainly a take, I would say. But if they can get
Stills currently the 53rd wide receiver off the ball, off the board, excuse me, Amendola at 79, and Parker is 36th, so late wide receiver 3. I think I mentioned this before in a group with Pierre Garçon, Cooper Kupp right in front of him, Emmanuel Sanders, Jordy Nelson, Marquise Goodwin, Jamison Crowder, Randall Cobb, Robbie Anderson right behind him. So we talked about that group earlier. Gets tough. It gets tough there deciding which players you like more, because you'll be in drafts where a whole bunch of those guys are on the board, and you're thinking, well, do I take Cooper Kupp because he could see a lot of targets, or do I take DeVante Parker because he should be the man there and score touchdowns? But I would tell you it's probably an inefficient offense. If you're in a PPR league, you probably go for the touches with Cooper Kupp.
Yeah, I think so. I think that of the guys you listed, I think I would probably favor Amendola just based on the value and things like that. Because Kenny Stills is, to me, more of a daily fantasy type of play. And I don't love that DeVante Parker price. I feel like I'm not getting a lot of value, really, on that. So I think I'd probably lean towards Danny Amendola of the wide receivers. I think Mike Gesicki, though, really is their tight end, the rookie tight end, is the guy who interests me, because we know that Adam Gase had a history, at least with what he did with Julius Thomas. As far as the tight end goes, I think he wants to, make that a point of contention for this offense, and he's certainly got a lot of talent. So he's someone that I'm interested in. I was looking at George's rankings that he has up, part of the exclusive edge package. In PPR, he had Gesicki at 26. So, I mean, currently, as it stands, you know, this guy is going to go undrafted. But if you wait on tight end, and if, you know, maybe you wait long enough and you want to pair someone, I would not hate a shot on Mike Gesicki at all.
Yeah. You won't even have to draft him right now.
Yeah.
You can just, he could be your last round pick, or he could be the guy that you're checking on the waiver wire. Depends how, you know, if you're in a standard 12 team league, he's the 20th tight end off the board, but I'd rather have them than Jared Cook. Another rookie, Hayden Hurst, is a few in front of him. Cameron Brate is a guy, I think I picked him in my most recent mock draft, the Scott Fishbowl. With OJ Howard being 15th and Cameron Brate 17th, And I've seen O.J. Howard go a couple of rounds in front of him at times. I'd rather take the shot on Brait. You know what I mean? They just re-signed Brait. It's not just O.J. Howard's position to take. So I think Brait could have some crazy value there as the 17th tight end off the board. But, yeah, Gesicki is obviously interesting. Who else they have there? Marquise Gray and Durham Smythe. Like, he's going to be their guy. A.J. Derby is there as a backup as well. So, like I said, the offensive line concerns there, but decent talent, for a couple of first-round picks, bookending, Josh Sitton, a good signing. Daniel Kilgore, Jesse Davis are slotted in right now at center and right guard, Ted Larson backing them up. Some of those guys are just guys, and they need to upgrade it. But defensive side of the ball, man, the Devontae Parker thing is interesting.
You're gonna put my defense?
I probably am not going to be in on him much. The Amendola thing scares me because you're talking about the third wide receiver. Now, I caution in saying this because it's not necessarily – if he's the slot receiver on a regular basis, it doesn't mean he's the third option. I say sometimes third wide receiver I use interchangeably with slot, which I shouldn't do. But will there be a heavy amount of targets to Amendola?
160 Jarvis got last year. Playing that, probably that role.
Yeah.
Comfortably the most on the team.
Yeah. He's extremely heavily targeted wide receiver. He's also a lot better than Danny Amendola.
Oh, absolutely. You know, absolutely. But
so
if he's coming into...
If your best receiver is a slot receiver, he's just going to get the ball. Like, that's just the way that goes. They shouldn't be looking at it right now in Miami that, well, we got to target the slot receiver. You got to target your best player.
Sure.
And it better be Parker, or they have some evaluation skill issues. Anyway, so let's move over to defensive side of the ball. We're running low on time. Let's see. Ageless Cameron Wake, according to ESPN, ageless Cameron Wake ranked second among 4-3 defensive ends last season with a 13.5 pass rushing productivity rating. He once again had more than 60 total pressures in 2017, something he's done every season of this decade except for an injury-shortened 2015. On the Tannehill thing, he ranked 7th among quarterbacks in 2016 with a 77.4 adjusted completion percentage and finished every season of his career with a grade above 80. Cutler was way down from that last year. So this defense... They drafted Minkah Fitzpatrick, who I think I banged the drum, was probably my favorite player in the whole draft, just like the way he plays. You got Rashad Jones there, who was an IDP monster for the last couple of seasons. I think from a fantasy standpoint, you're talking IDP players. Rashad Jones has been a monster the last few years, and you have to wonder what kind of impact bringing in T.J. McDonald, Xavien Howard, and Minkah Fitzpatrick these last couple of seasons will have. Now, the reason safeties get so many tackles is because the situation in front of them isn't so good. Kiko Alonso, who I don't think anybody is going to say is an all-pro anytime soon, had a monster season last year because they couldn't stop anybody up front. And the team, they were always on the field. They lost their middle linebacker, their second-round pick, Raekwon McMillan, in a preseason game last year. He was a rookie out of Ohio State. He never played a snap last year. So I'm really curious to see how this defense comes together because it wasn't a great overall unit last year despite talent on it, and obviously Ndamukong Suh isn't there anymore.
I wonder if with T.J. McDonald there, does that push them to put Minkah at nickelback, which, you know, it could work. I do think that he's best as a roaming free safety, but if you're going to play him at nickelback, so be it. You can try and strengthen the defense. I mean, losing a guy like Ndamukong Suh, look, I understand the contract was big, but he was still a very productive player. And, you know, that's a big loss. So it's going to be tough. If Raekwon McMillan and Minkah Fitzpatrick hit the ground running and they just get one other guy to pop, maybe Kiko Alonso finds form that he had once, it feels like a long, long time ago. You know, and Cameron Wake keeps up the productivity. Maybe they got something here. I do think as we look through these teams, this is going to be one of those teams that we come back to that say, man, that's a lot of question marks there. So, you know.
So many.
Yeah.
So many. Like, really, just a ton. And it's what makes it sometimes a harder team to evaluate. Now, they went 6-10 last year. They were ranked 25th in offense yardage-wise. They scored the 28th most points in the league. They allowed the 4th most points in the league. They never turned the ball over, 29th in that category. They didn't move the ball efficiently at all, one of the worst teams in the league in sustaining drives offensively, about middle of the road defensively, although they gave up a lot of points. But so there you go. As far as fantasy options on this team, I think you're deciding on whether or not you're going to draft Parker in that moment and whether you're willing to pay the price on Kenyon Drake. I'm not going to pay the price on Kenyon Drake right now. And I'm not suggesting that Frank Gore is the number one back and he's going to have the 261 carries that he had last year. But I'm not going to pay the price on Kenyon Drake. I don't trust it yet. Not with this group.
Yeah, I agree. And I, you know, and if we're going to get into, as we're, you know, we're closing up shop here, just how we would rank these teams, there's a lot of question marks there. So you could definitely, you could talk me into them in anywhere from 2 to 4. I think present day, I'd probably slot them second. I don't know how much of a gap I would say between the Jets. I think the reason for me putting the Jets third is if Darnold wins that job, I think the turnover stuff is going to be a problem. And then Buffalo to me is still the last place team. I really don't like that roster. I really, really don't. Offensively, I just think it's going to be a complete mess for that team. Ironically enough, though, that's exactly what I said for the Jets last year, and the offense was way better than it was supposed to be. So maybe AJ McCarron
still,
hits the
ground. By the end of the year, it still wasn't good, though. That's the thing. By the end of the year, yeah, the Jets raised some eyebrows and they won a whole bunch of games early. But once McCown got hurt, it fell apart completely. They lost every game, you know.
Oh,
they
yeah,
still
for
went
sure.
5-11.
Well, we
they
looked
almost
at
had 5 wins in the first half of the season, and yet they still only won 5 games.
The thing with the Jets is, and I don't know where you were predicting them, but it looked like it was going to be one of the worst offenses the NFL's ever seen.
That's
so,
right.
So for them to not finish 32nd of 32nd was an accomplishment, because I thought that if, you know, if there were 200 teams in the history of football, they would be 200 in the offense that we've ever seen. And Buffalo is giving me a similar feel, especially with that start to the schedule. So present day, I would rank them New England, Miami, the Jets, and then the Bills.
I'm picking Miami for last in this division.
Ooh.
I just don't like it. I just don't like it.
Is Tannehill not the second best quarterback in this division?
He won't be. You'll see. That's all I can say. I don't think he'll play like it. It's not super bold, because I think all three of them missed the playoffs anyway, and I don't think any of them get to 8 wins. So we're talking about a bunch of 5 and 6 win teams, and them playing each other can impact all of this. Give me one player before we're out of here, breakout guy in this division that's not on the Patriots.
Give me Amendola. I like the Amendola value.
I like it. Good stuff. Well, I'll save mine for the next time we talk, because we're out of time. Fantasy Football Frenzy with Kevin Walsh and George Gertz up next. Thanks for listening.